comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. And those of you who are just now joining us, in other words, you've never watched the show before, you've never listened to the show before, you're brand new here, well, you need to know it's talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. And it is a show where you matter. Tonight is K-Files night. Now, that's important. K-Files is our weekly newsletter, and it's absolutely free. There's absolutely no reason why you shouldn't be getting it. So, if you're not subscribed, go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, look for the link that says K-Files, and click it and subscribe. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. So, and you know, we don't rent the list of emails out. We don't sell it. We don't loan it. So you're not going to be spammed as a result of having subscribed to the K-Files e-zine. So be sure you do that. Jerry Wills, as you know, is the associate host here. And, Jerry said when he gave up doing the weekend shows, which we did as a trial, he said, you know, that he just had too many things going on to really do this every week. But when he had a special show that he wanted to do, he said, I will be back to do them. Well, he's going to do a special show. And it will be 1 week from tomorrow. Tomorrow is Saturday. 1 week from tomorrow, Jerry is going to do a special show in the members area. Now, that what that means is you need to be a member in order to get in on that show. All right? And if you're not a member, this would be a good time for you to join. It's only 23 cents a day. And, I mean, really, take 23 cents to the store and see what you can get with it. Nothing. But for 23 cents a day, you get a whole lot of value here at the Kevin Smith Show. You get to be in the members area, and you get to participate. You get to see the shows. And if you miss one, you can always watch the latest show. So that means if you miss the show tonight, and something's going on where you just can't be here to catch the show live, in the morning, you can click and watch this show from tonight, and that's in the members area. And then another thing, and this is important, we have forums, we have chat, we have a library of free ebooks that you can download. We have Video Galaxy, and then we have special events like this special show that's coming up, and I think you'll really enjoy it. So you want to be sure and be in the group, and you do that by joining the members area. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. We have BYOT tonight. Bring your own topic. It's Open Line Live, and we'll begin on the other side of this break. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And it is Open Line Live tonight. We will open the telephone lines in just a few minutes. Well, there's one already calling in, and the lines are not open. But the lines will be open in a few minutes, and we invite you to call with whatever is on your mind within our genre. Couple of things that I need to tell you about. Now, this is K-Files night, of course, and that means immediately after the show, we start sending out the K-Files. We think that last week's problem, where it would only send 650 and then it locked up, we think that's been fixed. But if it hasn't, we have a backup plan. And so the first 650 of you may get two of them. If it does lock up, then we'll have to send it out again using the backup plan. You'll get two of them. And I apologize for that, but we will get the K-Files e-zine distributed this week. Also, members, I sent you a notice today about the chat room. We did not get attacked. Let me unfuzz that. We didn't get hacked, okay? And so the problem with the chat room is something that was caused by good old moi. And I really messed it up. And I apologize. I tried to fix it today. I tried for several hours to get it worked out so that we would not have to reinstall the software. But I'm going to have to reinstall the software. Now, we'll do that sometime tonight as well. And it'll be back up and running. There was just no fixing it. I'm not sure what I did or how I did it. But I did. And so we'll have to reinstall the software. Now, last night we had James Horak on, and James has literally set the world on fire. People absolutely everywhere are talking about James Horak, and they absolutely love this guy. And so when we put it on the website that he was going to be on, I expected, you know, the first time or two, I really didn't expect that we would have much interference, and we really didn't have much. But I expected that we would last night, and we did. Now, the interference that we had, any time I talk about this, there's a little cadre of folks out there that send me emails saying, oh, you're always whining about some nefarious group sitting out there doing this. Look, I'm not whining about it. I'm telling you the facts. We got hit, and some of you are living proof that we were being hit because, and I got emails that told me about this. You called into the show, and instead of either getting online with me or getting our standard message that says that the lines are full, you got music. We don't have music loaded anywhere in the phone system. So you had been redirected to someplace other than here. So you were subject to it as well, meaning that your call just got redirected to someplace that played music for you. We really were attacked, okay? He was saying things they didn't want him to talk about, whoever they are. And so, it could be government, but it might not be. It could be somebody that is loyal to some other talk show. And look, when we have James Horak on, other talk shows' audiences just drain. And so it could be somebody, you know, that's loyal to some other talk show. We don't know exactly who it is, but it's for real. It does happen, and it did happen. And so the stream went down. Now, there are people that, you know, sent me all kinds of emails today, very helpful, trying to propose ways to get around that. Well, look, there is, if the primary stream is attacked, then that means it gets attacked That means that everybody, including all of the alternative listening possibilities, all of the affiliate stations, everybody, they hear the attack. And the attack can be that the audio just goes away, or in the case of those who are watching on our TV station, the video goes away. So all of that can happen, all right? And it's not happening here. There's nothing going on here. When that's happening, we're not seeing anything happen here. It's being interfered with somewhere between here and you. Okay? Now if they attack our connection, I see that happen. Okay, so and I talk about it, and then you know they don't do that too much, but the when the attack happens somewhere between here and you, I have no control over that, and there's nothing I can do about it except to continue to do the show, and you know, this is one of the reasons that I recommend being a member, because then you can watch the latest show, because we still capture the show. And then you can watch it. All right. I think now would be a good time for us to open up the lines. And I've got a couple of things that I'm going to throw on the table. One has to do with some mysterious findings that NASA has made that may just indicate they have possibly found life on Mars. Yeah. It's for real. Okay, and we'll be talking about it at some point here tonight. But the telephone number, the main number here in the studio, is 623-444-5889. Now, that number will work from anywhere in the world. If you're a first-time listener, write it down. If you're a member, then the telephone number's up on the screen. But if you're a first-time listener, write this down, 623-444-5889. Also, if calling that number, if you're in the USA or Canada and you don't happen to have one of those plans where you can call long distance without it costing you anything, then if you really need me to help you with that, the help is there, and here it is. It's a toll-free number. It is 888-223-4599. That works in the USA and Canada. And then if you're outside of the USA and Canada and you don't want to spend money on that international long-distance call, what we can do for you is a flash message, okay? So you go to my website, scroll down, and you will see where it says flash message, all right? Okay. Let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
It's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Hi, Kevin.
Yeah, that was me that tried to jump the gun earlier.
Why am I not surprised, Kevin?
Because as soon as I see that phone thing coming up, popping up on the screen, that's when I usually try to call in. So you're the one that was responsible for knocking the chat room offline, right?
I did it.
You're fired.
Okay. That means I can. That means I've got 2 or 3 days of vacation then.
No, you're all right. Oh boy, you were talking about life on Mars. Well, I'd like to direct a lot of people to a certain YouTube channel, and I'm sure he listens to the Kevin Smith Show. His name is Robot Coppola, and he has amazing videos, at least photo slideshows of unedited NASA images of the Moon and Mars. And some of them clearly show life forms life forms on Mars,
mm-hmm.
but also clearly show structures all over the Moon. You'd be surprised when you get photos that haven't been airbrushed by the airbrush crew down there at that JPL there.
Mm-hmm.
When they get unaltered images, you'd be surprised what you find on some of those pictures.
I've seen some of those, and I concur. He's put together some great slideshows, and it's Robot Coppola. And
do you know who I'm talking about?
I don't know who he is, but I do know. I mean, I'm familiar with Robot Coppola, and I've watched some of the videos.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, because I think it was linked off of one of your K-Files easings. I think one of them that I got some time ago. And yeah, a very, very good slideshow. I'm maybe thinking that this guy may be one of those insider boys in NASA that are actually the good guys. You know, there are some good people on the inside. They're not very many, but there are. But they are there.
Well, I got a little different view of that. I think most of them are good people. But I think what happens is it's those decisions for secrecy are taken at the top.
Yeah, but I'm talking about like at the very, very top, the small few that are at the top. I wouldn't be, you know, there may be that one person that is a good one that's sitting right at the top and does allow some of these things to get out. And I think that's what we're seeing. And you know, when I look at these pictures on the moon and Mars, I'm seeing, I don't see evidence of aliens at all. And I've told this to everybody I talked to, even on those forums on the YouTube videos. I said, these are remnants of a lost legacy that we have from before the last ice age. And, you know, it almost brings the emotional thing you get when you watch this thing. You're seeing true history, the true history of mankind right before your eyes, you know.
Do you remember the series of videos that came out about Apollo 20? And
yep.
A guy named Rutledge was saying, William Rutledge, or that's the name he used, was saying that there were some secret Apollo missions, and that in fact Apollo 20 was one of them, that it flew from Vandenberg, and that he was the commander. And
you know what?
You know, it all turned out to look like it probably is bogus. But do you remember one of those showed the body of a female that they said was Anunnaki? And that was recovered, they say, from the surface of the moon.
Yep.
The general look and features of that body match things that we have heard other people describe when they describe the Anunnaki.
Absolutely. You know what? I think that video is genuine. Now, judging by the research that I've done, mm-hmm. And, you know, who are the Anunnaki? I'll tell you who the Anunnaki are. And this is based on the research I've done, not just with Hancock and Bouval and other people that I've read and done research on. I think that when the cataclysm hit about 12 to 15,000 years ago, the one that abruptly ended the last ice age, I think that there were some people, when we had a high technological civilization, there's no question about it. And I think there were some people that managed to jump in some ships and get the hell out of here. Excuse my language. And they got the heck off of this planet. And I think the ones that came back when they decided to come back to the planet to weigh the damage. And I don't think they expected any survivors. And this is also consistent around the time frame when the human population did bottleneck all over the planet. And they came back, and I think this is where you get these legends about the gods came down and smelled the sweet meats of roasting meats and whatnot when they were of the survivors. And I think the Sumerians, who they call the Anunnaki, the gods, I think after maybe a generation or two of survivors struggling on the planet after the cataclysm, I think when they saw these returning human people that had originally left the planet to get away from the cataclysm, I think these were the people that became known as the Anunnaki. They became known as the Anunnaki, the Nephilim, the gods, titans, whatever you want to call them. And I honestly think that theory makes a lot more sense than any other that's ever come about. I think those people are the Anunnaki. So I think a lot of this stuff about the Anunnaki or Nephilim, I think there's a lot of truth to it.
All right. Well, Kevin, I want to thank you for the call. Interesting conversation, and I've put it in my notes that as of tonight, I am fired. Thank you very much. And ladies and gentlemen, how about you? It's BYOT, bring your own topic. The telephone number is 623-444-5889 or toll-free, I'm sorry, the main number, 623-444-5889, and the toll-free number, 888-223-4599. Now, it may be, you know, some of you are sitting out there and you're thinking, you know, I've never called in before and I'm scared to call in. I can assure you folks you use a telephone every day, and that's all you have to do is use the telephone. I assure you, I don't bite. All right. I would love to hear from you. If you first time caller, look, if you are a first time caller, when you call in tonight, be sure you tell me that you're a first time caller. Okay. Be sure you tell me that right up front. I'm a first time caller. People that have called this show, even some folks that haven't, you know, they called in like 5-6 years ago, and then they call in, they haven't called for a long time, and then they call in. Sometimes their voice is distinctive enough that I remember and I ask them. But a lot of times I don't. And, you know, I don't know if you're a first-time caller or not, so be sure you tell me. All right, what about this thing about life on Mars? Well, the rovers, you know, you have Spirit and Opportunity, and Spirit right now is stuck. So it's probably not going anywhere ever again. But it's still functioning, other than it's stuck. It's stuck in a sand pit. And so, but it's done a just magnificent job up until it got stuck, and it will continue doing science where it is in place, in situ. Opportunity still roaming around, and it's still able to move. But one of the things that they have discovered is that the rocks on Mars, especially in certain places on Mars, have this sort of high gloss finish on them. Now, we're used to that. We see that out in the desert. They call it desert sheen. And we're used to that. But usually only one face of the rock, one side of the rock, is going to be polished like that. And it's polished because of wind blowing sand. And it sandblasts it so that it's smooth and polished. But it's usually on just one side of the rock. It's not on the whole rock. So on Mars, they have found that same thing, but it's all over the rock. More on this when we come back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Very quickly, this rock varnish, they've known about it for a while, but they started looking at it with microscopes, and everything changed when they saw this rock varnish through microscopes, because what they saw looked strikingly similar to fossilized stromatolites. We'll talk some more about what that is, but now they're scratching their heads and saying, well, maybe we have possibly found biology here. Interesting, huh? All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Ryan in Washington, Kevin.
Hi, Ryan.
Hi. Well, I think I know why the UFOs don't land on the Washington or on the White House lawn. Because they're only searching for intelligent life.
They would have to avoid most capitals of the world.
I wanted to give a free plug out to iRadio LA. Mm-hmm. Anybody that can't get the video on your site, go to iRadio LA. That's a really great radio station over there. I really been tuning into that a lot.
Well, they don't carry the video.
Right, but you can listen.
Yeah.
But other than that,
Yeah, you know, I guess Richard Hoagland was pulling his hair out for a couple of weeks because he's waiting for photos to come back from the probe that went past Phobos to take new pictures of it, and I guess it took an ungodly amount of time for them to come back. And Richard was pulling his teeth out, and as soon as he got the photos, you could tell that they had edited out the stuff that would cause a paradigm shift. I think they didn't include all the good stuff in there. Some of the photos are blurry. So,
are you surprised?
Not surprised, no.
No.
But I wanted to ask you another thing. Do you think that Lacazar Filipov is doing okay? Do you think he's? I mean, I've been kind of concerned. Do you think he's went on with his life and he's not really? I mean, do you think he's healthy right now? Do you think he's doing okay?
I have no idea. I have had a couple of contacts from people in Bulgaria, and I've asked some questions about that, and I haven't heard back from them, so I don't know.
Well, if there's anybody in the audience that has never called, I would like to hear a new first-time caller tonight. Don't be afraid to call. It's Kevin doesn't bite, and so just call in, and it'd be great to hear from. I appreciate your show. I call every night. I call almost too much, but.
Well, Ryan, we appreciate you, and we appreciate the call. And you are right. We've had a number of first time callers over the past couple of weeks. We need some more tonight. 623-444-5889 or toll free at 888-223-4599. You can talk about, Ryan, thanks for the call. You can talk about, anything that's within our genre, which is UFOs, extraterrestrials, paranormal stuff, futuristic science, space exploration, any of that strange and unexplained stuff, Bigfoot, ghosts, any of that. Now, you may also wish to talk about something that you heard a guest say here on the show, and you can do that. That's not a problem, all right? Or you may have a question that you would just like to ask me. That's okay, too, all right? So the telephone number is 623-444-5889 or 888-223-4599. And then if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, meaning, of course, you're in Asia, Africa, Mexico, Central America, South America, Europe, Australia, you're on a South Pacific island, wherever, even if you're in the Antarctic, you don't want to make that international long-distance call. What you can do is go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down, and you'll see the link that says Flash Message. Just click on that link and send me a flash message, and I'll read it on the air, and provided it's within our genre, and we'll talk about it, all right? So it's bring your own topic. Do you remember back in 1976? Some of you weren't born then. And then some of you, like me, not only were you born, you were full grown. But you remember there was a mission called the Viking mission. And in fact, there were two Viking landers. And on board of one of those landers was an experiment. The experiment was designed to check for signs of organic life, biology. And they ran the experiment, and what they got, the results they got, said, yes, there is organic life here. There's biology taking place here. And, of course, everybody was excited about that. And then all of a sudden, NASA said, well, not too quick now, so we're going to run another test. So what they did is they used a different experiment package on the lander to run another test, an experiment package not designed to check for biology. And, of course, because it's not designed to, it didn't detect any biological signs. And they said, well, there you have it. That second experiment did not confirm the first one. Therefore, we think the data in the first one was flawed. And that's the way it has stood for a long time. And yet there are many scientists who recognize the trickery that was used. And they have, a lot of scientists have stood by the data and have said, now, wait a minute. You know, the data on that first experiment cannot be excluded by the second experiment because the second experiment is not designed to check for biology. And so it's been a big debate for a long time. One of the things that the Viking program did do, though, is it did confirm that there's a lot more oxygen, 15 times more oxygen present in that atmosphere than they could account for. And that is according to Dr. Harold Klein. And now Dr. Harold Klein was the chief biologist on that mission. And he is, unless he's retired, he is the director of the Directorate of Life Sciences at, I believe it's either Ames Research Center or JPL. And so according to him, we found 15 times more oxygen in that atmosphere than we can account for from all known sources. Now that's a quote from him. All right. So here we are now, that was back in 1976. Here we are in 2010 and the scientists are taking a look at this rock varnish. Sometimes they call it varnish. Sometimes they call it sheen. It's the polished, thin layer of polish that seems to appear on rocks when they're exposed for a long period of time to the elements. Now, sometimes they're polished by blowing sand. Sometimes they are polished by chemistry. It's things that chemicals that are in the atmosphere. Well, when you look at Mars, they say there's not enough blowing sand enough of the time where these could really be polished like that, and there's not enough chemistry in the air where the rocks could be polished like that. So why are these rocks polished? Well, they took a look microscopically. And what they saw looked very similar under the microscopes. And you know, the rovers have the ability to do that. They have microscopes on board. And so they look very similar to fossilized stromatolites. Now, these are layered. Stromatolites are layered rock-like structures that are formed by ancient microbes as they collected sediments from seawater in order to build themselves a home. Kind of like coral. It's not the same thing, but it's sort of that process. And these microbes on Earth developed very early on, the ability to lay down a layer of manganese to protect themselves from ultraviolet light. Because the theory is that there was a whole lot more ultraviolet light on Earth in ancient times as the sun, when it was young, you know, 3.5 billion years ago, they're saying there was more of this ultraviolet light. And so they're speculating that on Mars, where there is a whole lot of ultraviolet light, maybe the same thing is going on, and maybe they have discovered actual biology. Microbes, but actual biology. They're not sure yet, but it's pretty interesting, isn't it? All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, how you doing? It's Levi from Portsmouth, Virginia.
Hello, Levi.
Have you seen the photos of the rover? It says on the, I guess it's on the jet propulsion site where it says Mars rover with frost on it.
I don't think I have seen that.
Well, if you were to blow that picture up, I saw that picture, and if you were to blow that picture up to maximum that your computer can do it, and you would see all kind of domes, some seem like buildings and towers and parks and some of everything in there. I'm wondering just who built all that stuff.
Well, I have to say that's a good wonder. Now, let me ask you a question. Are these like very tiny structures that you cannot see, or are they somewhere off in the distance?
Oh, I mean, the way a satellite is taking the picture, I guess it's from the top view. But the domes are like, you seem like seeing the radar that television stations have, that mm-hmm. that small dome that they have for their radar
yeah.
and television stations.
Mm-hmm.
They're those type domes, and I thought maybe it might be some type of anomaly in the picture. But when you look at the picture, you can see that it gives a shadow.
Levi, can you hang on through this break?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you hang on because we didn't use up all your time and the break got us. So we'll put you on hold. You won't hear anything, but stay there. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. We're talking with Levi from Portsmouth, Virginia. Levi, are you still with us?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay, you know something? When you said that this was a satellite picture, I was when you first mentioned it, I was thinking this is a picture that was taken by the rover. But when you said it's a satellite picture, yes, I have seen that. It's looking down on the rover setting in frost.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you magnify that maximum,
mm-hmm.
You'll start to see all type of domes and buildings and what appears to be buildings anyway. So I don't think Earth humans built that. It might have been humanoids, but I don't think it was Earth humans. You think so?
Well, you know, generally, I would say no. I don't think Earth humans built it. However, we have been told by numerous guests on this show, people that are in a position to know these things, that there are human colonies on Mars. And so I've been told that by a major scientist. I've been told that by ex-military people. And, you know, so if what they say is true, then it could be built by humans from Earth, I guess.
Well, what puzzles me is, you know, we got the International Space Station, and when you put people in there, they only keep them up there so long, I think several months. I'm figuring that's probably the longest that Earth human could stay out in space, because if they could stay out longer, it seemed like they would put a test group in the space station, say, for a year, just to see how they would, you know, could make that travel to Mars and back. Unless they got a way, or some type of way, they could get to Mars in less than 6 or 8 months, or however long they keep people in that space station.
Well, you're right. And we have had guests on this show that have talked about and say it's a fact that we have spacecraft in a secret space program that can make the trip to Mars in a matter of hours.
Well, I wonder how they blast off without...
Well, you wouldn't have to blast off if you're not using rockets.
Yeah, that's true.
But look, you do know that Vandenberg Air Force Base launches more rockets than Cape Canaveral.
Right.
And even if they're using some kind of rocketry to get up into space, they could launch from Vandenberg and call it anything, because they launch all the time out there at Vandenberg.
Yeah, that's true. We'll switch subjects a little bit. I think I might have a minute or two left. On that, in the Roswell spacecraft that crashed, do you think that those beings that were in that craft were already dead when they got into the Earth's atmosphere? Do you think something went wrong? I mean, something they did went wrong. Maybe that ship was on autopilot and they were supposed to wake up and it didn't wake up, or something went wrong there.
Well, it could be. Now, we've had people on, again, people who are in a position or have been in a position where they perhaps would have access to information like this. And they say that we were testing a new type of radar, and that by turning that new type of radar on, it interfered with the ship and caused the crash. And that they have, these UFOs have since sort of retuned their equipment to handle it, but that was something completely new to them, and that it caused the crash. I also had someone on that said that we shot that one down, and I believe they said it was a Navy pilot that shot it down. So there's a lot of different stories about what caused that one to come down.
But don't you find it weird that, as far as we know, that whoever those beings were, they didn't send another ship to investigate what happened to the one that crashed?
Well, they may have. You know, there is the story that there were two crashes, one on the Brazil ranch and one near Corona, and that there were two crashes. So it could have been that one coming to check ran into the radar and went down as well.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Well, thanks, Kevin.
All right. Thank you for the call.
Okay, bye.
All right. Bye-bye. 623-444-5889. And the toll-free number, 888-223-4599. One of the emails I got after last night's show, because if you caught last night's show, either live or you picked it up as the latest show, one of the things that was discussed was James Horek thinks that real serious cataclysm is not too far into the future. And one of the emails that I got said, well, after listening to the show, have you changed your mind about having a party in Bangkok on December the 21st, 2012? And the answer to that is no. I'm going to have the party in Bangkok December the 21st, 2012. And or at least that's my plan. Now, there are things that could change that, but that's my plan, and that hasn't changed. And it points out, I think, something that we really ought to think about, and that is it is both interesting and important for us to hear what all these guests have to say. But it's one thing to listen with your ears. It's another thing to listen with your fears. Now, let's suppose that December the 21st, 2012 is truly going to be cataclysm. Maybe it will be. I don't think so, but maybe it will be. Now, I can sit here and fear it until the date arrives, and I can worry about it, and I can just be eaten up with it, but there is one thing I can't do. I can't change it. So my approach is things that I can change, I do. Things that I can't change, I don't worry about. If I can't change it, I don't worry about it. It is what it is. And I kind of operate on my dad's philosophy. He used to say, son, you got to live till you don't. And I operate on that, and that is, you know, that's the approach I take. So, but I, you know, personally, I think if there is a significance for December the 21st, 2012, I think the significance is it's the end of all these cataclysms we've been seeing. And I think we're going to experience quite a number of cataclysms between now and then. More earthquakes, I think, probably more volcanic activity. I think it's really going to rock and roll up till December the 21st, 2012. And I think that's the end of the age of destruction, if it has any kind of significance at all. Now, if I'm wrong and an asteroid hits us while we're having the party and you're hiding in a cave, but it's a planet buster and it destroys the entire planet. We're both going to go, right? The difference is I went out with a party and you went out hiding. If hiding makes you feel better, hide. But in my view of things, there's nothing I can do to stop anything that's going to happen to this planet, if anything's going to happen. And since I can't stop it, I can't change it, I'm going to live till I don't. And therefore, I invite you to join us at the party December the 21st, 2012, in Bangkok, Thailand. What a wonderful city Bangkok, Thailand is. And I think you'll absolutely have a ball. All right, it's Bring Your Own Topic. When we come back from this break, get your fingers ready and bring your own topic. We'll talk about what's on your mind. Welcome back. It is BYOT, Bring Your Own Topic. We will discuss what you want to discuss. And this is a great night for anyone who has never called in before, no matter where you happen to be. Just pick up your telephone, give me a call, and you'll find out I don't bite. 623-444-5889 or toll free 888-223-4599. And if you happen to not be in the USA and you're not in Canada, you can send me a flash message. And I have one from Andrew in Australia. He says, I just wanted to say that the images that Robert Harrison from England took by sending a digital camera to the edge of space via a helium weather balloon are fantastic. To think that it only cost him £750. And then he gives me a link to a 6-minute video which shows all the pictures taken from ground release through the edge of space. He asked if I will put that in the K-Files. As a matter of fact, we have time for me to do that because we haven't started sending out the K-Files. We'll do that after the show tonight, and I will include this link so that all of you can share in the experience of seeing those photographs, all right? And from Kevin in Australia, great show, and the so-called secret space program is questionable, but there's plenty of areas of no-fly zones, so who knows, only the people in charge of the skies. So what are your thoughts on the sun objects that you showed yesterday? And it looked like an aircraft carrier or, a space dust. Well, I'm not sure what I think about it. I think it's not an aircraft carrier, and I'm pretty sure it's not space dust. But for those of you who don't know what he's talking about, the SOHO satellite is aimed at the sun, and that's all it does. It looks at the sun, and it takes photographs, and it makes measurements. It was SOHO satellite was a project of the ESA, the European Space Agency. However, it is operated by NASA. ESA put it up there, but it's operated by NASA. And every once in a while, it gets some really amazing photographs of the sun. Well, the photograph that Kevin is talking about is it's a SOHO satellite photograph, and it has right down in about the 5 o'clock position, it's got a little dot sitting next to the sun. But whenever you decide that what you want to do is zoom in on that dot, it takes on some pretty interesting characteristics. It's shaped sort of, if you take a straight line and just draw a straight line from left to right and make it about, make it long enough that you can draw a circle right in the center of that line. That's what this looks like. In other words, there's a straight line, and then in the middle there is an orb, a circular section, that's a very bright light. But coming from beneath it, there is a looks like a streak of I don't know if that would be laser light, but it looks like a beam of some kind of energy that's coming from underneath the object, whatever it is. So what are my thoughts about that? Well, I'm not sure. It's weird. It's very strange. And I was asked earlier today in a telephone conversation, do I really think this is some sort of super ship that can get up next to the sun like that? Well, the answer to that, again, is I don't know. It is interesting. It is something that I think should cause you to raise at least one eyebrow and say, now that's weird. But imagine if, in fact, it is some kind of a super ship that can get right up next to the sun. Imagine that, first of all, it has to contend with the extreme heat of the sun. Now, we're talking about extreme heat. It has to contend with that. Now, would that be impossible? No, I don't think it's impossible. In fact, I think it is possible that given enough time and development, we ourselves would be able to develop a material that could withstand that heat. Maybe not with our current level of knowledge, and maybe we could. I don't know. But I think it's within our capability to design something that could withstand that heat. But in addition to that, think of the intense gravity that's pulling on that thing, whatever it is. Now, the sun has very powerful gravitational field. For something to be up close to the sun and not be pulled into the sun would mean that there is some kind of onboard technology that's way, way, way beyond anything we possess. So if this is a craft, the fact of the heat is not, it's withstanding the heat. It's not that amazing, because I think we probably could develop something that could, eventually, we could develop something that could withstand that heat. However, I don't know that we would ever be able to get that close to the sun and handle the gravitational pull and not be pulled into it. So I don't know. It's an amazing photograph. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, it's hi Kevin. It's John from Vancouver Island.
Hello, John.
Hi. I'm just I phoned in yesterday and asked James Horvath a question.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and what I was really after is, I'm paraphrasing myself. You know, I wanted to know his take on evolution, how species emerged suddenly, as it was revealed in the fossil record. And then I got off the line. And then James talked about his little fossil collection. So I never actually got his take on how species emerge, the way it's revealed in the fossil record.
Yeah. Let's say this, and then I'll ask you a question, because I know you have some thoughts on it. What you're talking about. For the audience, what you're talking about, the way it's revealed in the fossil record, what you mean by that, I assume, is that all of a sudden species arise in the fossil record. We don't see this gradual transition and morphing from one species to another, not in the fossil record. What we see is the species is not there, and then suddenly, boom, there it is. So what do you think? How do you think that happens?
Well, you know, I've been thinking about it for a long time. I think you could break it down into two considerations. And that is, the first consideration, which is logical, and that is, our species created out of existing species, changing the DNA with species that already exist, which is really what evolution is all about. Now the other consideration is, it may not actually work that way because of the idea of morphogenic fields, which was coined by Schumacher. It may actually pull from the future as much as it does from the past, and so if you looked at it, future to past, what you're more talking about is kind of like playing a musical instrument, where you've got nodes of vibration, you've got harmonics, and those nodes and those harmonics operate as much from the past as they do from the future, and it's more like a mathematical pattern, more along those lines. But what I really wanted to hear from James was, you know, do species emerge from existing or past species, or are they pulled in from the future, or how does that work? So I didn't really get that answer. And anyway, that's
well, let me throw this at you and get your response to this. The Human Genome Project discovered that we humans have 223 genes that have no evolutionary predecessors. In other words, they are not like and are not related to anything else on the planet. So where do you think those came from?
I don't know. The future? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a big mystery.
That's a good question. How did they get there?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, like, if species or even genes are somehow inserted along a timeline,
mm-hmm.
then the question is, how does that happen?
Well, after they came out with that information that we have 223 genes that are not that have no evolutionary predecessors, there were obviously a bunch of scientists that saw immediately the theological implications of that, and so they jumped right on it. And they said, well, no, it was this was caused by a sideways insertion caused by viruses. Well, my answer to that, and the answer of a lot of other scientists to that, was nonsense. A virus doing a sideways insertion would mean that there is an evolutionary predecessor. And these are not evolutionary. They have no evolutionary predecessors. And so, you know, they're not from here. Those 223 genes are not from this planet if evolution is correct.
Yeah.
Let me change that. If Darwin's theory of evolution is correct.
Well, you know, we don't even have to go there because...
Well, no, there are other theories of evolution that may offer some explanation for it, but the Darwinistic model would not offer that.
No, it doesn't offer... it doesn't even correspond to the fossil record. And that's the biggest problem with it. And actually, James responded to my question. Like he immediately said, the problem with random mutations is that if you've got speciation happening over a relatively short period of time, the problem with random mutations is the chances of bad stuff, mistakes, catastrophic changes, are way more likely to happen than an intelligent sequence arriving at a new species.
Mm-hmm.
So without some kind of intelligent or I'll say coherent mechanism, chances are, based on random mutation, the thing's going to die, it's going to turn into a monster, whatever. And therein lies the problem. So you need, again, based on existing DNA, you need a guiding, coherent, intelligent change mechanism. And if it isn't based on existing, then what you're doing is you're pulling from the future somehow to create a morphogenic field, which then will influence the DNA that's existing at that time. And I don't know which. That's sort of
all
what
right,
it was.
Now I want to bend your mind a little bit and just see what you think about this. I've had a couple of guests on this show, one that's written a book about this, who say that that every evidence of life, every evidence on the planet, points towards the fact that we are basically living in a computer program.
Well, you don't shock me with that. Like, you know, the Matrix. Sure.
So you would...
Carry on.
So you would have then, in a computer program, you would have the guiding intelligence already programmed in that you're talking about.
Oh, boy. Now, okay. Let's use the term matrix.
Okay.
Instead of a computer program.
Okay.
Now, the matrix, unlike a computer program, what the matrix is doing is it's creating the illusion of reality.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, you're alive, I'm alive, our audience is alive. So we can't exactly say that being alive is, you know, purely like the result of a program. Can't exactly say that, because the idea that we're conscious and there's consciousness involved.
So you would buy Kierkegaard's statement, I think, therefore I am.
That was Descartes.
Descartes, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Who did I say, Kierkegaard? Yeah.
Yeah. Descartes.
And yeah. I think, therefore I am. Well, so my if I can't think, then I don't exist.
Oh, yeah. I think he should have said, you know, I shit, therefore I am, or, you know, when I crap, my mom changed my diet.
Okay, we cannot do that on the show. Sorry about that. That is illegal. All right, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hello, this is James Horick, and I was listening to the gentleman from Vancouver Island.
Yeah, James.
And I think he misunderstood my meaning last night when he was asking about the fossil record.
Mm-hmm.
What I was inferring is that the fossil record is scrutinized too selectively to be valid.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but his question, though, has to do with how do species arise?
Yes, but he asked me on the basis of the fossil record, and I was telling him that the fossil record essentially is too incomplete and too selectively constructed to impart any meaning to how species arrive.
Okay, but how do they arise?
Speciation takes place.
How does speciation take place?
It can take place a variety of ways. It is all a factor of adaptation.
Okay. Well, what about us with 223 genes that basically are not from here?
That's a pool for variation. And who's to know what conditions can actually lead to some short-term effects without necessarily being mutational?
Yeah, but where did we get 223 genes that are not from here?
From a lot of interference.
By whom?
All over the place.
Well, be more specific. Don't be cryptic. Tell us a little bit about it.
I've already commented on that. That we didn't come from here.
Mm-hmm.
That oxygen wasn't our initial respirant, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, you commented on it, James, but that was 2 or 3 weeks ago, and not everybody listening heard that show. That's why I'm asking you to tell us about it. All right, so we came from somewhere else, which is why our genome shows 223 genes that aren't from this planet. But now, upon arrival on this planet, did we start picking up genetics from this planet? Or are we still what we were?
I wouldn't put it that way. What I would say is that different factors became advantageous over others. The people that had those specific phenotypes or traits did better than those that didn't,
mm-hmm.
and natural selection did the rest.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, but we are essentially what we were on the home planet, right?
No.
No? So we're very, very different from what we were.
We have all the potential. We're a wonderful species. We have adaptability, vitality, creativity, and many wonderful qualities that, if anything, E.T. is envious of.
Hmm.
And when I say E.T., I mean people that are from off-Earth origin, but not Homo sapien.
Okay, now that brings up a question, and we're getting close to the break, but back at our home planet, did we have less potential and less creativity?
one factor that allowed a great deal more communication and involvement with other civilizations, other planetary civilizations.
Mm-hmm.
We had a unified consciousness.
Okay. But less creativity?
Well, creativity is like so many other things. Necessity is the mother of invention. Creativity is the child of a need to adapt, readapt, mm-hmm. to change.
So, in your estimation, in which place were we actually a better species, there or here?
Having a little bit of frame of reference for that, I would say that I'm sold on humanity here. However, my opinion is just part of the equation.
Mm-hmm. All right.
If I wasn't deeply impressed with Earth-based humanity, I would have left a long time ago.
Okay. Very interesting thoughts and comments, but we're headed into a break here in about 5 seconds. James, I want to thank you for the call. Very interesting.
Thank you very much.
All right. Okay, folks, we shall return on the other side of this break. More of your calls. Bring your own topic. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and BYOT, Bring Your Own Topic Night. Let's go to the telephone. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller.
Yes, I'm here.
You're live on the air. Your first name and from where are you calling?
It's Jeff, and I'm from Pennsylvania.
Hello,
How
Jeff.
How are you, Kevin?
Good. How are you this evening?
Good, good, thank you. The previous caller had an interesting topic, and the reason I'm calling in is because I wish I had the ability to pose the following question to him. Does he think there is some semblance of a hive mind involved? And the reason I'm asking this is because I've been playing with some technology from Todd Murphy recently. It's called the God Helmet. And we've been trying to ascertain just how far things like telepathy and remote viewing and out-of-body experiences go. And what I've found is that it elucidates extremely vivid dream states. And in the lab, Dr. Persinger, who did the original work on it, basically had people that were getting really good telepathic states.
Mm-hmm.
They were able to get out-of-body experiences and things of that nature. So my question would have been, do you think that we have some semblance of a hive mind, or are we just simply connected in a way that the universal matrix, the Akashic record, whatever you want to call it, the mind of God, whatever it is, allows us to contact each other? And the experimentation with the God helmet, or Shiva helmet as it's called now, isn't the only reason I ask that. About a little over a year ago, or maybe two, I was working in telecommunications and working with a fellow in cellular service. And he and I had a good rapport. We were both ex-military. I was from the intelligence community, as you probably know. And one day I was just going about my business on a regular day, and his face popped into my mind so strongly I thought, boy, why in the world am I thinking about this guy? It's got nothing to do with him, what I'm working on now. And I called him the next day and I said, look, Jason, about 3:20 p.m. yesterday, were you thinking about me? And he thought about it for, I don't know, about 10, 20 seconds. And he said, yeah, I was. How did you know? And I said, well, your face popped into my mind. I said, I suspect there's some sort of a linkage going on. And I said, let's try this again. I said, what I'll do is, without you knowing when, I'm going to think of you. And I'll just picture your face in my mind, and we'll see whether or not you get me on your mind at that time. So we did the experiment, and sure enough, that's exactly what happened. So I guess the question would be is, are we something of a hive mind? Obviously, we're not totally a hive mind. Or are we just so connected because of our genome into the matrix that we can literally dial up someone and be able to interact with them? And my experimentation in remote influencing tells me yes. What do you think?
I think I'm going to ask you, which one of those do you think it is? Do you think it's hive mind? Or
mind.
I'm sorry?
I don't have any doubt.
Okay, but is it a hive mind, or is it that we're just so linked into the matrix that we can dial somebody up? Which one do you think?
I think the previous caller is correct that ETs are jealous of what we are. I think we originated on this planet. I think that our genome was tweaked, quote-unquote, and I think those tweaks gave us some interesting things, but I don't think that they gave us that ability. I think what happened was, is if you think back that way back into hominid man and way, 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 way back, before our genome might have been tweaked, you would think that perhaps that the connection to nature, the connection to the universal matrix, would have been strong enough through regular evolution that we would have the sense of, yes, there's a presence nearby, there's a tiger behind us, we sense it, let's get the heck up with the tree, let's go save ourselves. Okay, that's enough of a connection, and that would ensure that you would actually develop over a couple of centuries or millennia into whatever you were, whether it be any type of Homo sapien you can imagine. Okay, those are basic instincts that even a tiger, a lion, a rattlesnake, a squirrel would have. Okay, those are all standard things that you would expect them to have, otherwise they would not have made it so far. What I think happened was, is when they tweaked the DNA or the genome, I think they put in some things that rapidly accelerated the intelligence quotient in us, but I don't think they were the ones that had the effect on our connection to the matrix and how we can connect to each other.
So you think that connection is something sort of primal.
That's what I think. But I don't say that that's what caused it to be as sharp as it is today. I think it may actually have been sharper back then. I think it's been attenuated since then. But in some individuals, and, you know, out of, you know, so many million people, certain individuals will have a certain level of tweaking that goes on in their genome where they are even better connected than they were 100,000 years ago. However, I don't think everyone was. I kind of wish I was one of the ones that were better tweaked, but the bottom line is that's what I think.
So the ones that were making these adjustments then are tweakers, huh?
Well, that's kind of a...
Sorry, it was a bad joke, but I just couldn't pass that up.
No, and I kind of like it.
Okay,
what do you think yourself? If you were to say what you think happened, what are your thoughts?
You know, I honestly, I really don't know. I really don't know what I think about it.
Critically analytical mind, what is your best take?
Well, I have no evidence for what I'm about to say.
That's my point. I'm looking for that.
I have no evidence for what I'm about to say. I think that we either originated elsewhere or we are hybrids. But in either case, we are not fully terrestrial. And I think it is that part of us that is not fully terrestrial. Now, I do have evidence for that. That's the 223 genes. That part of us that is not fully terrestrial is what's plugged into a sort of universal consciousness. I think that James is correct when he says that we have a split mind, and out there, there is a unified mind, but that's what the extraterrestrials experience. They have a unified mind where we have a split mind. But I think that part of us that is not from here, that part of us that is definitely off Earth origin, that part of us is what's plugged into this consciousness. I think the reason some people are more attuned to it is that those are people who are less inflicted with a split mind and have a more unified mind.
That's actually a very logical conclusion. If you were to posit something, would you say that that's attainable by the rest in some way, shape, or fashion? Or do you think that's something that needs to be further tweaked or accessed in order to get there?
Well, I think it's attainable, but I think it has to do with whether a person really wants to get there. If they really want to get there, they have to shed a lot of baggage that's terrestrial. And this is just an opinion now. But the baggage I'm talking about is baggage that causes us to have a split mind. And,
wow. I think I've got to agree, but not only that, I've got to qualify why I agree.
Okay.
I think that, and I'm not saying that I'm pro anything or con anything, but the bottom line is that if it was required reading in grade school for everyone on the planet to read Gods in the Garden, your book, I don't think we would have nearly the amount of baggage that's being carried today. And I think that people would actually realize what they're reading, and it would open up a lot of channels, because then they would be open to all kinds of things that would allow them to drop the baggage and go see what's out there.
Well, I thank you for the compliment on the book, but even without that book, a good starting point is what's going to drive us. When you get into a car, there has to be a group consensus about who's going to drive. Otherwise, there's a fight for who's going to be the driver. And so you have a consensus about who's going to drive. And you don't let little children drive. You love your kids, and they're important. And because they're important, you don't let them drive. But if you do, they will drive you into a collision eventually.
Right.
And Every time I say this, I get hot email about it.
Really?
Emotions are the children. They're fleeting. They come, they go. And
the reason you're getting the email on that
mm-hmm.
is because there is a whole body of thought that says that emotions run the rest. And while I agree with 10% of that statement, I know for a fact that the other 90 is that without the left brain, you tend to make more mistakes than you do if you stay right-brained. Now, there are certain individuals who are very right-brained who don't make that quantity of mistakes, but again, just like you said, if you allow a child to drive the car, or if you allow your right brain to totally dominate your life, you'll wind up running into a brick wall sooner or later.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this because the practitioners that I work with, many of them are extremely right-brained because it's the only way they can do their job as extremely well as they do.
Jeff, I have to step away for a break. And I want to thank you so much for the call, but we have to run. Very interesting conversation. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Let me complete my thought, my comment that I was making with Jeff. You know, people misread and they will say, they misread what I say, they misunderstand it, and they will send me email where they say that I'm so wrong because emotions are important and I'm discounting emotions. No, look, everything has a place. And emotions are important. I'm not without emotions by a long shot. But it's like the kids. The kids are important. They're so important, you don't let them drive the car, you see. And so your mind, your thinking has to be in the driver's seat. Emotions will sling you to the left and sling you to the right, bring you to a screeching halt, and then race ahead at 1,000 miles an hour. And it will crash you if you let it drive. So that's my view. I've said it before. It's not something that's new for those of you who have been listening for any length of time. I think that emotions are important. Important enough that you don't let them drive. If you let them drive your life, you're headed for a wreck. You have to let your mind drive. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Brent from Wyoming.
Hi, Brent.
sorry about that. I'm going to postulate something and ask your opinion.
All right.
I missed Wednesday's show because I worked that night.
Okay.
He was talking about leaps in evolution. And here's a thought for you.
Okay, now when you say he, say...
Your guest on Wednesday.
Yeah, Robert Felix. And yep. He was talking about magnetic reversals and evolutionary leaps.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, here's a thought for you. Let us take James Horrocks... communities of souls that are, if I think that's what he calls them, inside those EMVs, those
okay.
electromagnetic vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
And let us say that the universe is a clockwork, time to create surges of energy. The conscious will of these entities in the EMVs or something similar is able to use that energy. Now, if you take the Akashic Records, if you want to call them that, or the Matrix or whatever, and you see that it has, you suppose that it has all the blueprints of everything we need, genetic material, everything.
Okay.
Let us say the consciousness is able to take advantage of the electromagnetic energy surges that the clockwork of the physical universe is creating and change things using the information from the matrix. Does that make sense?
Yeah, now the question I would have is the origin of the information in the matrix.
That I have no clue, but that's just a thought.
You know, you might be right. Life is a mystery, and the universe is a mystery, and that's one of the things that we do hammer on a lot here on this show, and that is that there is so much more to know than there is that is known. And, you know, when we start to think that we've really got it all figured out, we need to stand and stare out at the universe for a while. There's very little we have figured out.
It's the old saying, the more you think you know, the more you find out you don't know.
Yeah, you know, one of the things we've talked about here, I've talked about the whole idea that there's nothing faster than the speed of light, and I've said that's fiction. The speed of light is just the fastest thing we have observed. Well, now, I mentioned on this show a pulsar that's undergoing magnetic field reversals at six times
the speed of light.
That's right. Well, now they have found a pulsar that's 10,000 light years from us, and it's not pole reversals that it's undergoing faster than the speed of light. It's pulsing faster than the speed of light. It's actually pulsing faster than, I don't know how you measure that, but it's a research group at a university in Texas that has discovered this. And they discovered it by taking measurements over a 3-day period. And during that 3-day period, this thing was pulsing faster than the speed of light. So my point in bringing that up, my point is quite simply this. Before 1995, they told us there were no other planets out there, just this solar system, and outside of this solar system, there were no other planets. Well, we now know that's not true. Well, we've been told that things cannot move faster. There's no speed faster than the speed of light. Now, we have two different astronomical discoveries that show, in fact, there is something faster than the speed of light. Both of these things show us that we really are not as smart as we thought we were.
Like I say, the more you think you know, the more you know you don't know.
Yeah, that's what Confucius said. Hey, thanks for the call.
Yep.
All right. All right. You know, there's so much to know that what we think we know, we really find out pretty often we didn't know. You know, a whole lot of what we say we know is really belief. We're confident in it. We believe it to be correct. And that's okay, as long as you understand that's a belief. There's very few things that we actually know. Most of what we say we know is really a belief. And as we surge forward in scientific discoveries, we're finding more and more and more things that are disproving what we said we knew. Now, that doesn't mean that reality changes. It means our understanding of reality changes. You've heard me say, I do not believe that there is such a thing as the laws of physics. I don't buy it. I think what we call the laws of physics, those are just descriptions of our current understanding. And our current understanding is subject to radical change as we make new discoveries. For instance, there is no speed faster than the speed of light. Well, that simply isn't true. We now know for sure that there is a speed faster, lots of speeds faster than the speed of light. And so what we thought we knew, we now know we didn't know. And that means that the so-called laws of physics are changing, and they're changing rapidly. Reality is reality, whether we have discovered it yet or not. But as we discover it, it changes our understanding of reality. And this is one of the reasons that I say we don't need to have our emotions driving. Our emotions come along for the ride, but we need to have our minds driving, because that's the only way for us to actually be able to cope with and handle the paradigm shift that's underway. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this evening, and we try to do an open line show each week. I want to thank everyone who called in. I want to thank everyone who expressed an opinion or asked a question or sent us a flash message. All right, folks, that's a wrap for tonight and for the week. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you wish to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.